topic 8.13 is to consider the methods used to compare the contributions of nature and nurture to brain development, including evidence from the abilities of newborn babies, animal experiments, studies of individuals with damaged brain areas, twin studies, and cross-cultural studies. Now, we can look at, initially, people with brain damage. If you have limited damage, and this would constitute just tears between neurons, there is a degree of plasticity in the brain. The axons would be able to regrow. So, you know, study of patients with brain damage has shown that when there is only a little bit, the axons can grow around the limited damage, and this bypasses the damaged areas. However, if there's extensive damage and scarring, then no amount of axon regrowth will be able to bridge the scarred area. So that might mean that, depending on how severe the brain damage is, certain areas can be restored or not restored. So it had been thought, as a result of these studies of brain damage, that the areas of the cortex are fixed after a certain stage of development. We now know that new connections can be made and new areas can take over control. So areas of the frontal lobe can assume responsibility for other functions, for example. Moving on to newborn babies, I told you in the previous session that in a study of cataracts in newborns, sight can be restored if the surgery to correct cataracts occurs within 6 weeks of birth. And this is more evidence for critical windows of development, as with the kittens and rhesus macaques experiment. This is an example of nurture overriding nature. Babies are also able to discriminate between living biological and non-biological movement. So if you gave them a real person versus a human-like robot, they'd be able to discriminate. They actually prefer the biological movement. So you might want to think of whether there's an evolutionary advantage in being able to do that. It would certainly help to be able to recognise, you know, someone who might feed you versus something that's not going to feed you. Twin studies. We can look at identical twins who have the same genotype, give or take. And we can look at fraternal twins who would share 50% of the same genetic information, being as closely related to each other as brothers and sisters. In terms of remembering faces and places, there is a greater degree of similarity between identical twins than in fraternal twins. This suggests that there's a very strong genetic basis for response to faces and places. However, when remembering and recognizing words and letters, there is little difference between identical twins and fraternal twins. So this suggests that there may be an environmental link between words and letters. So if there's a strong genetic basis for response to faces and places, why might you think that is? What evolutionary advantage would there be for the being able to respond to faces and places? Well, I would say that being able to recognise your own tribe, your own family, and your own cave, your own village, is very important in determining whether you're going to survive or not. Finally, we can look at illusions. The Müller-Lyer illusion, the classic one where you've got two lines and arrows and so on. Most people would see the right-hand line of the Müller-Lyer illusion as though it was larger, though they're both the same length. And we interpret the lines as if we're in a rectangular room. Zulu culture, where the rooms are circular, as opposed to carpentered, have no problems whatsoever.